This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. One of the biggest stories slated for Wisconsin in 2020 was the Democratic National Convention. But as we move closer to the convention date, it's one of the last things on the minds of many Wisconsinites, especially Milwaukeeans. People in Milwaukee and throughout the U.S. are continuing to march against police brutality, calling for justice, reforms, and accountability. And these protests centered on racial inequities are especially potent in Milwaukee, considered one of the most segregated cities in America. Since the beginning of his career, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes has focused on racial justice. As a Milwaukee native, Barnes says that people here are, quote, stepping up for good reason. He joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski to talk about the protests and what it'll take to create statewide reforms.
Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, welcome to Lake Effect. Thank you for taking some time to speak with me today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So equity was a key point and goal of yours, along with sustainability, right after you and Governor Evers won the election. So in light of recent protests following the death of George Floyd in Minnesota, what are the key issues of equity that need to be addressed right now?
Well, that's the thing. They're the same issues. And addressing equity on the front end prevents things like this from happening. Making sure that communities are properly resourced, making sure that children have the same opportunity in all parts of our state. And that's not the reality right now. And it's certainly not the reality across the United States of America. Otherwise, you wouldn't see the response that you're seeing. And I remind people that the activity, the protest, even some of the more damaging aspects, which was a small minority of it, it's like volcanic activity. People have dealt with these extreme living conditions for far too long. And I think about elected leaders, a lot of people in office, especially our highest offices, who haven't experienced life in folks' shoes and in the shoes of marginalized people, be it poverty or be it color of skin. And so the ability to relate to what's going on isn't there. And that's why you don't see the response that you should be seeing. And I am very frustrated every day that I wake up and have to deal with the inaction of our state legislature, especially on the issues that are as pressing as this, the ones that are, you know, right in the forefront. And to see so many folks across the state of Wisconsin who are stepping up, who are coming out of their homes to protest injustice is something, is a sight to behold. And it's something that makes me very proud, because these are people who probably didn't think that issues of racial justice ever would impact them. And the issues probably still won't impact them, but it's too big to ignore at this point. I saw one person with a sign, I'm not sure if it was here in Wisconsin, but the sign just said, I finally get it.
And what is the governor's office's role, including yours as lieutenant governor, for pushing for equity? And what's been done or will be done? You mentioned legislatures have yet to really move or make action.
Yeah, so we have to lead with equity in every decision that we make. And even the budget that was introduced was one that established equity in the forefront, and also, you know, sustainability. But that means that, you know, we need to put a little bit more money into early childhood programs, especially in our most challenged zip codes, like the 53206. The governor did that, making sure that we work to create opportunities for people, especially returning citizens. You know, and making the upfront investment so we don't have to spend as much money on incarceration to create job programs and to help small businesses. You know, there's so much, but it's tough to do it on our own. And that's not the way governing is supposed to happen anyway. And people can look at it as divided government, but it should be looked at as shared government. But that's not what we're getting right now. And it's not about what the executive branch is getting. It's what the people of the state are or not getting. And, you know, the time for the partisan political games is long. That should be over with, because these aren't partisan issues. These are issues of life and death for people. And, you know, we're going to keep moving forward with everything we can do as far as executive authority. But there's still so much more that's left to be desired.
On Twitter, you said, quote, "We need to invest more in neighborhoods and community services. The more money we invest in opportunity for people, the less money we have to spend on police and prisons." So does this mean you're in favor of defunding police as a way of reform in policing? Evers has said that he doesn't believe defunding the police will work. But what's your opinion on that stance that people are calling for right now?
I think I made it pretty clear in that message, in that tweet, because the more money that we invest in our schools, the more money we invest in early childhood education, the more we invest in job programs and business creation programs in our most challenged parts of society, the less money we'll have to spend on incarceration, the less money we'll have to spend on policing. It's a conversation about budget prioritization, and we have to promote budgets that put people first. And in putting people first, you effectively work to create safer communities, places where people want to live and where people want to invest and where there is less of a need for police presence. So I think that, you know, my message is very clear there in saying what we need to do up front, what the immediate thing needs to be to address the crises that we're facing, to right the wrongs that we're dealing with.
But do you believe that taking money from overinflated police budgets should then be put towards other things in that sense of defunding police?
Well, you can look at City of Milwaukee, for example, where 45% of the departmental allocations that goes to police, while you get, you know, libraries like 2 or 3%, neighborhood services, 2 or 3%. You know, I think that you can look at that as a priorities mismatch. I think that if you look for, like, even in the federal government, you look at the bloated military budget. Even a state government, you look at the Department of Corrections budget, and, you know, this is our own administration, right? Like, you know, and this, it didn't start with us, and it's something that we're actively working to remedy. We're working to reduce our prison population. We are very intentional about making that happen, and it takes that intentionality, you know. And it's easy to look at a budget of a police department and say, well, yeah, we are spending a lot of money. How do we get smarter about this? And again, it becomes a conversation about needs. This isn't about attacking the police. If anything, it's about making their jobs easier by implementing you know, programs that we'd have services where they wouldn't have to respond to things that aren't crimes, where they don't have to respond to you know, instances that would be better suited for a social worker or some sort of crisis intervener or a violence interrupter that would help, you know, promote peace in communities in the first place. I think that's where our funding should go, because, you know, what's going on right now isn't necessarily working. You know, police brutality is one thing, but in general, the idea of promoting safer communities, I don't think that we're doing a good job at that. And when I say we, I mean everybody in most offices across the country. There's so much more, and that's why I call on, you know, our local elected officials to think about the priorities. You know, think about what opportunity can mean for the communities and the districts that you represent. Think about what opportunity can mean for this entire state. And, you know, a world that sees much less violence, a world that experiences much more peace and much more harmony and, you know, interconnectivity between neighbors, between, you know, communities, that's possible. You know, you can look at it as some sort of, you know, pie in the sky dream, but it's absolutely possible. I think that the United States is one of the countries that has seen the most trouble because, you know, from our founding, it was a violent founding. And it only makes sense that there is still violence all these years later, 300, you know, years later. And we could be far better off, but it takes imagining. It takes people challenging their ideas, their perception of what society should look like.
So you are a Milwaukee native, and I'm curious, what was your and has been your personal reaction to the marches that have taken place here and continue to take place here in response to police brutality and a host of other issues?
People are stepping up for good reason. And I think that we have these and the thing about it, too, is, I mean, you just saw somebody get shot in Atlanta just a couple of days ago. But I think that what we're seeing also is a compounded crisis, where we have the pandemic and people are out of work, people aren't going back to school, and people have so many more grievances to be aired. And what COVID-19 did was expose a lot of the fissures, it exposed a lot of the societal flaws that we have, especially amongst race and class, and you see the most impacted people, those who are losing their lives at an inordinate rate, you know, these are Black and brown people, these are low-income individuals. And so when those sorts of societal failures are highlighted, when you have an instance where you have a George Floyd who, you know, died, you know, with his neck under the knee of a police officer while three others looked on, you have an Ahmaud Arbery who was killed by a vigilante while a person followed and filmed the instance, when, you know, and immediately you think this is someone who's trying to, you know, stop this from happening, but that person was a party to the crime. You see a Breonna Taylor who was sleeping in her home, you know, and she couldn't have been farther removed from any sort of crime at all. You know, you see these repeated instances and you sort of ask yourself, you know, how much more can you take? And the bigger question is, you know, why did it take so long for so many folks to ignore it? And like that person's sign said, I finally get it. I often think about people who haven't necessarily had to think about these things. They haven't had to think about racial injustice. They've gone through childhood, they've gone through school, adult life, and professional life, and they're still learning. And that confuses me because, you know, you've made it this far in life without ever having to consider the plight of other people. And I think that is a bigger part of the problem too, is that the issues of racial justice have been way too easy for folks to ignore. You know, and people have gotten pretty far in life without ever having to make those considerations. And, you know, that is a challenge I have for myself. I think about the injustices that many other communities deal with that I don't personally deal with, but I understand it, because as long as this injustice goes on towards, you know, communities, then we're all going to be in a bad place. And that is, and what we've seen over the last couple of weeks is everything coming to a head, and people aren't going to deal with it anymore. It's really a surprise that folks have dealt with it this long.
So in regards to racism as a public health crisis, Milwaukee County leaders declared it a public health crisis back in 2019, and currently we're seeing more city and county leaders across the U.S. officially doing the same. So would you have any plans to move to make it a statewide declaration? Because as you mentioned, most people don't think about it as that way, and they don't live that experience. But if the state played a role in declaring it a public health crisis, that could potentially help influence funding and policy.
Yeah, whether formal or not, it's something that I carry around all the time. I talk about issues of racial injustice and how it is a detriment to how it impedes our state's ability to thrive. You know, when I'm in Milwaukee, I find myself talking about number of rural issues. When I'm in more rural areas, I find myself talking about more Milwaukee and diverse issues, because I want to make sure that I'm doing everything I can do to bridge those gaps, to start some conversations, to begin dialogue, to start the process of understanding for people who just may not get it. And there are some well-intentioned people who just don't get it. There are some people who actively don't get it, who try their best to avoid it and will gaslight the American public into thinking that this isn't a real problem. But there are a lot of people who truly want to be better, but just don't know how. I actually received a message from a person in the western part of the state, and I don't know how to respond to it. I don't know how my office is going to respond to it yet. But it's a person who reached out in earnest and said that he has you know, his own issues that he's dealing with. And, you know, he talked about having this Black neighbor that he used to talk to about these things. And, you know, since then, that neighbor has died. So he said that he doesn't have that outlet anymore. But he feels a certain sense of nervousness around youth of color, right? But he reached out not to say that he thinks they're doing anything wrong. He just doesn't know what to do. He just doesn't know how to approach it. So there are some people like that who legitimately, you know, are looking for the best way to go about things, who want to do the right thing but just don't know. And that's a process that, you know, government can't necessarily fix. You know, that's an issue that society has to fix, but in many ways you see society working to fix itself. You know, like I've mentioned before, the people who are standing up to protest, these aren't folks who are showing up because they want things to get worse. They're showing up because they want to save the nation from cascading in a complete and total devastation.
Racial justice has been a focus of your entire career, and the protests that have spread around the world show the reactions of a blatant disregard of Black lives. And you mentioned being not quite sure of how to respond to the person who reached out to you. And there's a lot of fatigue in the Black community that you can personally attest to. So how fatigued are you? And what, if anything, helps you remain hopeful, especially in your role as Lieutenant Governor?
Yeah, and I'll start by saying that, you know, racial justice has been an issue for my entire working life, but there have been so many other issues, right? Like, I think about issues like job and economic development, education, you know, prison reform, environmental issues, all those things, right? And addressing one doesn't take any focus or energy away from the other, but it doesn't feel that way when I talk to other people that, you know, you can prioritize your issue, yes, but that doesn't mean disregard the other ones that are going on. It's always like, you know, we'll get to the racial justice one later. We'll get to the racial justice issue. Oh, this isn't the time to talk about that. This isn't the part of the state to talk about that. This is the campaign to talk about that. But for a lack of talking about it is why we are where we are now. And the fatigue that does exist, because there definitely is a fatigue, because you feel like you talk about this stuff forever, and I can go back to folks who still, you know, want to be educated, people who've gone on to be very successful in life and now are like crowdsourcing their views on society by leaning on people who've been through the most to educate them about something that they probably could have taken a little more time to pay attention to, but chose not for whatever reason. And I just want to encourage people to, you know, be better when it comes to that. Think about before you ask your friends of color, before you ask your Black friend, can you help me be better? Like, think about how is it that you got this far without ever having to worry about it, and think about how tired, some of your Black friends could be in a moment such as this, because there's no off switch. A lot of people go home, relax, chill out once this, you know, wake up in the day and they, you know, send some tweets and go to a march, which is great. You know, do everything you can do to, you know, talk to your family. There's so many things that people can do, and I'm not here to admonish anyone for trying. But I do want to remind people that for a lot of leaders who experience and live this daily, whether in elected office or not, it's a bit much. It can be a lot, but we're called to leadership, and you know, this is the work that has to happen, and this is one of the reasons why I got elected, to make sure that we're leading with our best self, that we're doing everything that we can do to build safe, happy, healthy, and inclusive societies, not just here in Wisconsin, but all across the country. I know it's possible, and I think that's sort of what keeps me going, that ridiculous hope, that ridiculous optimism, that things can be better.
Well, and what are you doing to take care of yourself during such demanding times?
I exercise, that helps. Been doing a little bit of yoga, video games here and there, and I eat a lot of food. I eat so much food.
All right. Well, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Mandela Barnes is the Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, and he spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski. You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at wuwm.com.